As you can see, we today are going to begin Acts, the 27th chapter, and try to get through the last two chapters of Acts, which is the Paul's journey to Rome. We've been, for the last 2 months, studying the life of Paul, specifically his missionary journeys. We know that he went on at least three, and this would actually be, could be considered the fourth, because as we know, Paul never missed a chance or a day to spread the word of God and to convert people if possible. And he even did that while he was a prisoner and converted many of his captors. So we ended last week. Paul was in. Last week we talked about Paul's, I guess you could call them legal hearings, his court appearances in Jerusalem and Caesarea before Agrippa, and the other Festus, and those Romans who controlled the country at that time. And we know that chapter 26 was Paul's speech to Agrippa, who was part Jewish and knew the old law, knew much of it. And many of the things Paul talked to him about, the history of the Jewish people, Agrippa already knew. And so when we get into verse 27 of chapter 26, Paul asks him straight up. He says, King Agrippa, do you believe the prophets? I know that you believe. Then Agrippa said to Paul, you almost persuade me to become a Christian. And so that's a very notable verse that I'm sure you all have heard many times. But of course, almost, but he didn't. You know, and close only counts in hand grenades and horseshoes, we know that. So it didn't work for Agrippa either. So, in any case, they knew that, or Agrippa said, said to Festus, this man could have been set free if he hadn't have appealed to Caesar. And we know that Paul did that. We talked about that last week. And so, today we're going to talk about the voyage to Rome and the few things that we know that happened after they arrived there. Who again was with Paul at this point in time?
At least Luke is not would it be Mark?
Well, Luke was with him. I think there was at least one or two more. We'll I think they're listed. I can't put my finger on it. I think we'll get to that though today. So, you know, we know. Something that I thought of this morning I never really thought of before. What was Luke's occupation? He was a doctor or a physician. And compared to those today, we wouldn't say he probably wasn't much of a physician, but he was a physician of the day. And that's pretty interesting that he was with Paul in all these travels and these troubles that he went through. And he had his own personal doctor. Now we know that Paul, you know, was stoned. And we're going to see that he was bitten by a poisonous snake today, and didn't affect him. And those things were the work of God. But still, yet, did God heal every little problem that Paul may have had? Physical problem. If he broke his arm, if he cut himself, if he got sick, got the flu, whatever, did God heal all of those things? No, he didn't. His eyesight, he never healed that. And even though Paul prayed for that three times. So, but yet, it was good that he would have someone with him to care for him physically when he had that need. And also these other men helped with his, we talked about the logistics of traveling. Where can we stay? Where can we get food? What's the safest way to go places, etc.? Okay, so chapter 27, and we're not going to read all of this because we won't have time, but I will read a few verses as we go. But if you have a comment, let me know as we go through. So when they finally decided, when the time was right for the trip to Italy, and this was dependent upon the Roman government, the Roman centurion, finding a ship. Because it's just not every day, you know, they couldn't call up and book a flight. It's not like booking a cruise or whatever. They had to find a ship that was going in the general direction that they were going. And so Julius, verse 1, was a centurion of the Augustan regiment who was in charge of Paul and the other prisoners. We don't know how many other prisoners there were, but there were some, and I assume, well, maybe I shouldn't assume, but we do see in another book that Luke was with Paul when he was in chains in Rome. Was Luke a prisoner too? Don't know. He was with him. But in any case, there were prisoners. And we see in verse 3 that this Julius treated Paul kindly and gave him liberty to go to his friends and receive care. Why do you think that is? Why would this prisoner be granted such a liberty by the cruel Roman government? Well, obviously they had some trust in him that he wasn't going to try to escape. The things that he said, the things that he did, I think this Julius may have been in charge of him before they left for Rome. I thought I read that at one time, but I can't put my finger on it right now. But in any case, he impressed him to where he had, we might call him a trustee today. So, here we are on our map. Come on, pointer. Well, it's not wanting to work. But anyhow, if we start over here in Jerusalem in the bottom right, and they catch a ship there at Caesarea and sail up to Sidon, as we see in the next few verses. They get up here and sail between Cyprus and Asia Minor, which is going to be a safer way to go, less wind. You could consider that open sea, I guess, but it's not like the main body of the Mediterranean. Oh, okay. So they're sailing along the seashore as much as they can, and they get to Myra, and it says Lycia. Did it start working?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So they're over here. They get over here, and I think that's where they find this ship. This Alexandrian ship that's actually bound to Italy. So the ship they had been on, that started on, was not going to Italy, apparently. It was going over here to Asia and made it safely. And so here's where they hook up with this ship to sail all the way to Italy. And it's not just a weekend voyage. So, you know, Luke gives us pretty much an account of all the events that happen, not every day, but says they sailed slowly many days. And they passed under the shelter of Crete with great difficulty. It says we came to a place called Fair Havens, which is down here on the south edge of Crete. So, sailing was not real easy, but it was not stormy. So they were making progress. And so their general direction so far has been west, south here a little bit, west, and then they're going to have to hook north to go to Italy. So when they got there, Paul, we're not told if Paul had a vision. We're not told if exactly how he perceived this, but Paul says in verse 10, "Men, I perceive that this voyage will end with disaster and much loss, not only of the cargo and ship, but also our lives." He tried to persuade them not to press on at that time to Italy, but to wait and wait until after winter. And he was not able to persuade the centurion. Obviously, the sailors would have more knowledge of the sea than Paul. And how much the centurion believed Paul's statement apparently was not very much, but we're not told if he believed that it was some type of... if Paul was inspired and he believed that or not, but he went with the sailors. And so they decide to, as I understand it, here in verse 12, they wanted to reach this Phoenix, this harbor of Crete. Now my Bible says this harbor opens towards the southwest. Because if it opens to the southwest, the other direction would be northeast, not northwest. So I don't know if this is a mistranslation in the verse that I have. Somebody else have a different reading in yours? Does everybody say southwest and northwest in verse 12?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm kind of thinking that it could be the reason it's a harbor is there's an outlying, pretty small island out there that's sheltering, and it opens two ways.
It's going to be a great big.
Well, no, that wouldn't be.
That'd have to be an island.
If not north.
Yeah. But in any case, they were going to try to slip around here somewhere over on the west side of Crete to spend the winter. These sailors wanted to, and so they take off from Fair Havens, and Paul was right. Verse 14, but not long after, a tempestuous headwind arose called Euroclydon. And that's defined by Thayer, I believe, as a southeast wind. Okay? So southeast would be blowing this direction from, say, Africa up towards Crete. And, no, I'm sorry, that's southwest. It would be blowing in this direction from, say, Egypt up to towards Crete. That would be... Well, no, it's coming from the southeast. Because if you have, say, a south wind, the wind is blowing from the south to the north. Okay, so if they reckon their directions the same way we do, if it's a southeast wind, it's coming from the southeast blowing to the northwest. But in any case, it was a bad one. And they couldn't control the boat. Verse 16, it says that we ran under the shelter of an island called Clauda and secured the skiff with difficulty. What's a skiff?
It's just like a little small boat that they carry along, I guess you made for rescue purposes.
Yeah, a lifeboat type of a boat, or maybe a boat that when they pull into a harbor, they'll anchor offshore because they can't run a big ship up aground and they have to get to shore. So they take this smaller boat, and so it serves more than one purpose, but it's probably, when we think of a smaller boat, it's not that, I'm sure. It's not a ship, but it still holds a lot of people. And I believe they had been towing this boat behind them, probably. You'll see these big cruise liners and stuff we have today, and they've got all these big, these lifeboats that hang over the side, you know, and they can drop them down into the water. But I think they had been towing this boat, and so then in verse 15 it says, "We secured the skiff with difficulty. When they had taken it on board, they used cables to undergird the ship." So they brought the lifeboat on board, got it up there, and then it looks like they somehow strengthened, I don't know if it's the lifeboat or the big ship, with these cables. But verse 18, they were exceedingly tempest-tossed. The next day, they start throwing stuff overboard. The third day. On the third day, we threw the ship's tackle overboard with our own hands. I think this is meaning the Paul and his companions. They were all fighting for their lives here. "Now, when neither the sun nor stars appeared for many days and no small tempest beat on us, all hope that we would be saved was finally given up. And then finally, and they were fasting, Paul stands up and says, 'Men, you should have listened to me and not have sailed from Crete and incurred this disaster and loss. And now I urge you to take heart, for there will be no loss of life among you, but only of the ship.'" So Paul is reversing his original statement. And why is that? Somebody read 23 through 25, please. Okay. But we do know that this statement was inspired by this angel and tells Paul, you're gonna live and all that are with you, but you're going to lose your ship and everything you've got. Verse 27, the 14th night. Can you imagine being out in that day and age in the middle of an ocean and not seeing the sun for 14 days and nights, being just, you're totally lost. Everything is thrown overboard, and you're just hanging on. You know you're going to die. It's just a matter of time. And finally, the sailors determined that they were coming close to land somehow. They had this sense, so they start taking soundings. Does anybody know off the top of your head how deep a fathom is, or how long a fathom is? 6 foot. So they let a rope down with a weight on it. That's how they took their depth. It's 120 feet, 20 fathoms, 120 feet. They went a little farther, 15 fathoms, 90 feet. So the bottom's coming up fast. They're getting close to land. So they throw four anchors out from the stern. One of you young guys, what's the stern, the front or the back of the boat? Wrong. It's the back. The bow's the front, the stern's the back. Okay? So they, it says they prayed for the day to come. You reckon those sailors were praying too? I bet some of them were. So now we see what the sailors decide to do. They're going to abandon ship and just leave all the prisoners and all the soldiers. So they say in verse 30, it says they were seeking to escape the ship. So they let the skiff down into the sea, and they say, we're going to put some anchors out in the front too, in the bow. Well, Paul knew what they were doing, and he tells the centurion, unless they stay here, we're going to die. And so the soldiers just cut the ropes on the skiff and away it went. And so they were all still on board. So they broke fast. Paul, in verse 35, 36, Paul took food, gave thanks to God before everyone, and began to eat. And so that encouraged the rest of them, verse 35 and 6. In verse 37, you see how large the ship was. 276 people on board. That's a lot of people. And to think that their boat's about to be smashed to splinters, and every single one of them is going to make it. And probably a lot of them couldn't swim. You know, swimming wasn't nearly as popular then, I don't think, as it is today. So they ate food and threw the wheat out into the sea. Why would they have wheat on board? To make bread, I would think. So they, I realize this is a fairly simple class. It's just an account of their trip, so bear with me. So the island that they had anchored off of is called Malta. They didn't know, the sailors didn't know what it was or where it was. And here we are right here. Here's the 14 days worth of going around in circles up and down, whatever. And this is the little island that they come to of Malta. And so they saw this bay, a little harbor, whatever, and they decided to cut the anchors and make a run for it, let the wind blow them there. And so verse 41 was kind of curious to me. It says, on their way there, it says, striking a place where two seas met. I thought, well, that's really interesting. And like me, you've probably seen, there are a couple of oceans that come together. I'm trying to remember what they are. I'm thinking one of them may be the Indian Ocean. And there's a distinct line where these two oceans come together. You can see the difference in the color of the water. And I thought, well, there's not two oceans here. So I got to reading on it, and apparently there is a peninsula of land that comes out, and it causes a current, like a whirlpool, possibly because of the underwater currents. I don't know. But somewhere right there at Malta, there may have been a peninsula or an isthmus of land that came out, and the water, if that's what the case is, this big whirlpool, the ship got caught in this whirlpool. And was probably, well, it says the prow stuck fast. Prow, that's another word for the bow, guys. And remained immovable, but the stern was being broken up by the violence of the waves. So if the front, if the bow was in the front and being sucked around, in any case, we know that the ship was being broken up. And so the centurion, it says, wanted to save Paul. Paul had really made an impression on him, hadn't he? And they were in this together. And so, you know, one of the rules, one of the rules that these soldiers were under, when you had a prisoner, if something happened while you were in charge of that prisoner and you were transporting the prisoner or whatever the case may be, if it came down to where, if the prisoner was going to escape and you had no control over it, you were supposed to kill the prisoner so he would not escape. And if you didn't, if the prisoner did escape and you're in charge of him, then most likely you would be dead. Your life would be required for that. But the centurion, and verse 42, the soldiers were going to kill all the prisoners. But the centurion overruled them. And I guess we could say he took a leap of faith here. He said, nope, we're not going to do that. Everybody's on your own. Make it to land.
And I think he probably perceived that there was something extraordinary.
I think so, yeah.
He was getting close to believing, like you said.
I think so. So they all made it to land. Any thoughts before we go into their their time on Malta? And they were there at least 3 months, about 3 months, it looks like. So that means that they would have spent the winter there. Does anybody know off the top of your head how far, where is the equator from here? Isn't it a little bit, isn't it south a ways? It's not too far from the equator, I don't think. So just thinking about the weather, you know, how extreme it may have been, I don't know. Obviously, it gets cold when you're wet, especially at night you would be cold. But I don't think it says anything about snow or severe extreme weather. So anyhow, they spent the winter here at Malta for about 3 months and then headed north. So they make it to shore, and they're building a fire to get warm. And that's when this snake comes out of the sticks that Paul had gathered and bit him. And so the natives said, "Uh-oh, yeah, this guy, this prisoner here, he's murdered somebody, and this is what's the gods have caused the snake to bite him, and he's going to die." Well, he didn't die. He didn't get sick. He didn't even get his hand didn't even swell up. And so then they decide, well, he is a god, because nobody lives when this snake bites him. And so there's no doubt that Paul used this occasion to, even though we don't have it right here in this passage, there's no doubt that Paul preached to them Jesus Christ. He told them of the real God, just as he did at Athens, where they had all of the idols and even one to the unknown God. What an occasion for Paul to have an audience, and believe me, they were listening. And so then we see this, whether you might call him the governor of the island, or maybe he was the king, or he was the chief, whatever you want to call him, this Publius. His father was sick, and Paul, verse 8, Paul went into him and prayed and healed him through the power of God. And so then, of course, word spreads, and all the people on the island came up. And I didn't write it down, let me think. The island, I think it said the island was 17 miles long and about 7 miles wide. Does anybody have a note on that? So, that gives you an idea about how big this island was, if I remember correct. So, you know, 17 miles, I mean, there could be a lot of people living there. A lot of people. And obviously, verse 10, when they got ready to leave 3 months later, they gave them clothing, food, whatever they needed. And so there's an Alexandrian ship, probably from Egypt, that they catch next, headed to Rome. And it says it had wintered at the island. And so then we get Luke's account of coming up through Syracuse, up on the east side of Cilicia, which is, of course, Sicily, and on up to Italy. Okay, so they land up here at Puteoli, verse 13, and says, "We found brethren and were invited to stay with them 7 days, and so we went toward Rome." So they're back on land and begin the journey up to Rome. So, brethren start coming south to meet them. The word spreads. And I think I read that this Appiforum here, I believe that was 33 miles south of Rome. So that gives you some idea of our scale here. This Appii Forum, and then here's Rome right here. So while they're going, the word spreads ahead of them, and people start coming to meet Paul. So when they get to Rome, verse 16, and when we came to Rome, the centurion delivered the prisoners to the captain of the guard. But Paul was permitted to dwell by himself with the soldier who guarded him. Here again, he gets special treatment. And, you know, that's going to be for the furtherance of the gospel. Not just because Paul was trustworthy, not just because he was a good guy, but because his work was to spread the gospel to everyone that would listen, anyone. So what does Paul do in 3 days? I mean, he just got there. He just went through this shipwreck and this long voyage. It took them months. And here they are on the other side of the world, basically, as far as they're concerned back then, the populated world. Here they are in Rome. And Paul is not concerned about going before Caesar. That's not his main concern. His main concern is certainly not escape. He knew that if he was to be set free, that God would provide that for him. But he called the Jews together to preach the gospel and to instruct them that the Gentiles had also been accepted into the church. So, verse 17, so when they had come together, he said to them, "Men and brethren, though I have done nothing against our people or the customs of our fathers, yet I was delivered as a prisoner from Jerusalem into the hands of the Romans, who, when they had examined me, wanted to let me go." Remember what Agrippa and Festus decided he could have been let go if he hadn't have appealed? "Who, when they had examined me, wanted to let me go because there was no cause for putting me to death. But when the Jews spoke against it, I was compelled to appeal to Caesar, not that I had anything of which to accuse my nation. For this reason, therefore, I have called for you, to see you and speak with you, because for the hope of Israel, I am bound with this chain." What's been the history of the Jewish leaders in Paul's life since he was converted regarding their treatment of Paul? Right. Opposition to the point of death. But it doesn't deter Paul. It doesn't deter him, because he knows that there may be some who are willing to listen. And then we see in verse 21 the response to him: "Well, we didn't get any letters from Judea about you, and none of the brethren who came reported or spoke any evil of you." I believe that these are Jewish Christians, at least some of them that he called. Especially it says there, "Nor have any brethren who came reported or spoken any evil of you." So they had got word of Paul. They knew of Paul. But apparently they had not been preached. They didn't know about Cornelius. They didn't know about the Gentiles who had been accepted and that it was now open to all. "But we desire to hear from you what you think. For concerning this sect, we know that it is spoken against everywhere." What sect?
Christianity.
See, now that almost makes me think that they're not Jewish brethren. They're just Jews. They're not Jewish Christian, just Jews. I'm not sure. I went back and forth on this. Right.
And that's part of why it was allowed to grow under Constantine, because it just felt like it was a different sect, not a new religion.
Right, but these are Jews that are talking. These are not Romans that he's talking to here. These are Jews. But we do know that there is a church at Rome. In fact, the next book of the Bible that we have here, the book of Romans, was to the church at Rome.
When Paul was on his third journey, when he met Priscilla and Aquila, and hadn't they been driven out of Rome? Hadn't the Christians been driven out of Rome at that time?
Yeah. Well, Jews had been driven out. I think it was just the all the Jews. I don't. And when was the church established at Rome? We don't really know, do we? We don't really know of a certain apostle that may have done that either. But it certainly appears that there were a group there, but they were not instructed yet in the fact that the Gentiles had also been received. But in any case, they say, verse 22, well, we'll listen to you. We want to know. So it says they appointed a day. Many came to him at his lodging, to whom he explained and solemnly testified of the kingdom of God, persuading them concerning Jesus, both from the law of Moses and the prophets, from morning till evening. So Paul is holding court here, or service, or teaching out of this house that he was living in. It says, and some were persuaded by the things which were spoken, and some disbelieved. Same old story. And then verse 25, they disagreed among themselves, and then Paul says, the Holy Spirit was right when Isaiah prophesied, saying, and you've probably got it in italics there out of Isaiah, hearing this people will hear and seeing, or hearing they will hear and not understand, seeing you will see but not perceive. Their hearts have grown dull, their ears are hard of hearing, their eyes have closed because they don't want to see and they don't want to understand. Because if they do that, then what? If they understand the truth, then what?
You've got to change your life.
Right.
You
have to change. They didn't want to do that. And so when Paul said this, they left. At least those who disagreed with him left. So he says in verse 28, therefore let it be known to you that the salvation of God has been sent to the Gentiles, and they will hear it. And when he had said these words, the Jews departed and had a great dispute among themselves. So, I don't know if there's any Gentiles there, but if there were, there probably weren't very many. Probably none, from the way it reads.
This could very well be the main starting of the church service.
Yeah.
You know, time is goes along a little more than 300. But then, when Paul wrote the letter, you know, there's some that say that he was turned loose for a while. He got to make one more trip back to Jerusalem, but I don't know if that's true or not.
Yeah, we don't know. Possibly there were people who had been converted and had drifted back to Rome before he got there. But there may have not been a church established. I don't know. And I don't know how long it was from this time until he wrote this letter to the Roman church. But in any case, verse 30, Paul stayed 2 years, it says, in his own rented house and received all who came to him. Reckon they let him rent a house himself? How would he pay for that? Maybe through work. I mean, he worked. He supported himself. But in any case, whether he rented it or is rented by someone else for him to live in as a prisoner, it says anyone who wanted to come and see him was able to do that. And verse 31, he preached the kingdom of God and teaching the things which concern the Lord Jesus Christ with all confidence, no one forbidding him. But we do know that we've got epistles written while he was at Rome, at least during these 2 years and maybe later on, because we don't actually know exactly when he died, but he continued to spread the gospel up to his death.
Verse
Yeah.
When he first started teaching them. So
yeah.
I always took it that that's when the church got started. Paul went there, and then for 2 years, as you read, I'm not sure the timeline on when he wrote the letter of Romans.
Right. I'm with you on that.
In Romans, the 15th chapter and verse 25, it says, "But now I am going to Jerusalem to minister to the saints." So some have thought that that was written in Corinth, you know, when he was on his way back to Jerusalem. But I don't know if that was that time. Or not.
Well, if it was, then there was already a church at Rome.
Yeah.
But what? Who would have established that church? What apostle would have went there, or inspired person would have went there to start the church before then? Yeah. Well, it's. I think most every nation. Yeah, of course they had been. Yeah, you're right. It says visitors from Rome, Acts 2 and 10. Visitors from Rome, both Jews and proselytes. But of course the church hadn't been established on the day it was established on the day of Pentecost. And if they had already come from Rome, they couldn't have been Christians yet.
They may have went back and started.
Yeah, they may have went back and started it, yeah. Okay, thank you for your attention, and we'll have a different teacher next week. I'm not sure who that is.